Good morning, everybody. Once again, how's everybody doing this morning? Good, good. Good to have you here. If we haven't met, my name is Sten, and I'm the pastor here. We're thrilled to have you with us. We're in the second week of just a little brief summer series here called Love Like Jesus, as you saw on that video there. It's a series where we're trying to take just a real close-up look, hopefully a really practical look week in and week out, a practical look at how we love like Jesus. His ability to engage with people, to draw people to him, was really second to none. It was then and still is now. And so for followers of Jesus, for people even maybe taking a step down that lane, he really is the example. He's the model for us on how we treat one another, how we would engage with one another, and how we would love one another as well. And at Mid-Current Church, we want to lead the way in all that. We want to reach more and more people for Jesus Christ. We want more people to know of God's love for them. And sometimes how we treat other people, how we love them, is how they know about God's love for them, God's love for the world. So we want to be all about this here at Mid-Current Church. Last week, we took a look at how Jesus loved people when he spoke to them. We looked at how he had a hard conversation, really, with a woman who was caught in the act of adultery. She was caught living a life that was somewhat out of bounds, and he's in this kind of hard conversation with her, and he stands for what's good and right and what is true, and at the same time, he offers this kind of crazy forgiveness, and he's able to do that by speaking to this woman, by speaking to people as he does with truth and with grace. Full parts truth, full parts grace, both at the same time, 100% each. It's not 50-50, it's not 60-40, it's not 70-30 here. It's full parts truth, and it's full parts grace, and it's incredible, and it's what makes his ability to love people so incredible. And our love for people, we said last week, really depends on our ability to do the same thing. It depends on something else, something more as well, and so I'm really excited for us to discover it this morning. I'm really glad that you could be here. As I was preparing for this message for week two in this series, there was a song that kept playing over and over again in my head. Occasionally, my wife Erica can verify this, occasionally the song, you know, would be coming out of my mouth, singing around the house. It's the same part of the song, you know this, when there's a song stuck in your head, it's like the same part of the same song that you just keep singing over and over again. So I'm sure this was fun for Erica and the kids. But here's the thing, it's a song that I have a hunch that many of you know. So you're going to actually help me this morning set up the topic for the morning. You guys ready for that? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to sing the first part of this song that's been going through my head all week. I'm going to sing the first part of the song, and then when I stop, I need you to fill in the blank with the lyric that is missing. Can you do that? Okay, it's real simple. I think you guys are going to do great. Here's the song that kept going on in my head all week long. It was this song right here. You can see it. The song is, "Cause I would do anything for love. Oh, I would do anything for love." Your part's coming up real soon here, okay? "Yes, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that." I knew you guys would come through for me. That's perfect, right? "I would do anything for love. Yes, I'll do anything for love, but I won't do that." Show of hands, you're among friends here, okay? This is a safe place. How many of you have said that before? How many of you have a "that"? You're going, "Hey, I'll do anything for love, but I won't do that." Nervously, shyly, I see hands dotting up all around, okay? This is something that we all do. Fellas, you're telling your girlfriend, you're telling your wife, "Hey, honey, I love you. I would do anything for you." And then she asks you to watch The Notebook, and you're going, "But I won't do that." Okay, girls, the same thing goes here. You tell your guy, "Hey, I love you so much. I would do anything for you. Except for stay for all 9 innings of the baseball game. I won't do that," right? This would happen to me all the time. I'm a huge Cubs fan. Erica knew that. We'd go to the Wrigley Field in the summer. We lived in Chicago. Wrigley's the best, right? And all of a sudden, the 5th, 6th, 7th inning rolls around. Erica's looking at me like, "We staying for all 9 innings of the game?" I'm going, "Are you? Of course we're staying for all nine innings of the game, right? Does a one-legged duck swim in a circle? Yes, it does. So we're staying for all nine of these innings, right? And if it goes into extra innings, you better buckle up and get yourself a hot chocolate because we're staying for those too, okay? That one gets a little personal for me here. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Grandpa, you want the grandkids to come over. Can they please come over to play? We just want the grandkids to come hang out with us. And then there's a diaper that needs to be changed, and you're nowhere to be found. Right? You're in the garage. You're saying, hey, I love the grandkids. I would do anything for them, but I won't do that. Okay, this could go on and on and on. We've all got places where we draw the line. We say, hey, I do love you, but I won't do that. The truth is, I think this happens in areas of our life, your life, my life. I think this happens in areas of our life that are far more important than baseball games and chick flicks like The Notebook, right? When it comes to the important parts of our lives, when it comes to even... when it comes to the spiritual parts of our lives, when it comes to important people and places around us, I think we do the same thing. All right, then we say, hey, yeah, I'm in. I'm all in for this. You can count on me. I won't do that. We say, yeah, I love you, love this, but I won't do that. I think all of us do this one way or another. Here's the thing, though. Some of us just get a little sneaky about it, right? We all do it. I think some of us just get a little sneaky about it. We might not come right out and say it. We might not come out and say, but I won't do that. I think we instead find a few other ways to get the message across. Let me just quickly show you what I mean here. Take a look at this.
Okay, ways to say no. There are a bunch of them. No thanks. I'm good. I'll pass. One of my personal favorites. For sure, no. I don't know if you knew this or not, but when you got saved, you got eternal life, forgiveness of sins, and access to a whole long list of ways to say no that'll make you sound like way more spiritual of a person than you actually are. I don't think it's God's will. It's just not his timing. I'm feeling led in a different direction. But let me talk to my pastor about that. It's a closed door. I'm waiting on the Lord right now. I just don't feel peace about it right now. God has a different assignment for me. I just didn't feel prompted. I just don't feel like that's something that Jesus would do. But I just feel like I'm not in that season anymore. Can you help me move this weekend? But normally I would, but I just feel like God is just telling me to rest right now. I just got a sense that it didn't line up. Right now I'm in a season of new wineskins. What does that even mean? I just feel like right now I'm in a season of creating margin and I just don't have the bandwidth. Are you even speaking English right now? I was just asking if you wanted to get a pizza. Prompting. How many times have I told you about the prompting? I'm not feeling the prompting. I don't know. I'm just not really feeling the Spirit's leading on this one. You know what? I'm not sure. Let me lay out a fleece on that one. Okay, I don't think anyone says that. And of course, everybody's all-time favorite, let me pray about it.
Come on, everyone in this room knows that at least at one point in your life, you have said one or maybe more of those things. Am I right? It's your subtle way of saying what? It's your subtle way of saying, but I won't do that. I'm not doing that. We all do it, right? I'm kidding around. We're joking at the beginning here, but I'm serious, right? We all do this. We love God. We love others. We love Jesus. We love how Jesus loves others. And we love to put, you know, pictures of clouds and flowers on our Instagram feeds with Bible quotes to talk about God's love and how all this great stuff. But then when God has something for us to do, right? When God has something for us to do, we say, but I won't do that. Right? God reveals to us that there's a need that maybe we could meet. And we say, but I don't do that. It's not my season right now, right? God puts someone in our lives that for us to help, for us to support, for us to encourage, for us to invest. And we say, I'm too busy for that, right? God puts an opportunity into your lap. And you say, I'm too important for that. I don't have enough time for that. And this list goes on and on and on. Your life and my life, this is the truth. Your life and my life are full of so many instances when we draw the line. We say, hey, yeah, I'm in, but we draw the line. We say, yeah, hey, I love you, I love this, but I won't do that. And here's what I believe. Here's what I believe, that when this is our response, not only is the world around us, right? Not only are our people around us, important people in our life, people who need you and me, here's what I believe, that not only is the world around us missing out on something when we respond like that, but I really believe that we are missing out on something too, right? And so I want to talk about this. What I want to do this morning is I want to show and read for us all. I want us to see this morning that Jesus did that. We're going to take a look at a story here where we see that Jesus did that, right? He's sitting around the table for his final meal with his 12 disciples, his 12 guys, and he does the ultimate that. And everybody else is saying, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm too important for that. No, I'd be too embarrassed to do that. No, there's no way that you catch me doing that. And this is exactly what Jesus does. He does that. And so I want us to see it this morning. I want us to see what he does, and I want us to see what it is that we learn from it, because there's a few important things for us to learn. So here's what's happening, right? Jesus knows that his time has come. He knows the next day he's going to be crucified. He's going to be killed up on a cross. And so he sits down to dinner with his 12 closest disciples, one of which he knows that he's going to betray him, right? But they're sitting down to dinner together. In the Gospel of Luke, actually, we're going to look at a passage from the Gospel of John, but the Gospel of Luke, Luke's recording, Luke's memory of this moment, adds some other details to the story that I think are pretty interesting. Actually, Luke adds and gives some context to this moment. It lets us know that they're sitting around this table last time together, and the disciples are actually arguing about who's the greatest. Luke adds this detail so we know what's happening. They're sitting around arguing about who's the greatest among them. Jesus is about to give his life for them the very next day, and he's trying to have just a little moment here with them together as a group, and they're sitting around acting like a bunch of little kids, going like, oh, hey, who's the best? Hey, Jesus, who's the best among us? Which is your favorite? Which one of us is going to be the greatest? Okay, so this is what's taking place. This is what's happening at that final dinner when Jesus decides to do that. I want us to take a look at it. We're going to start reading from John chapter 13. You can follow along with me on the side screens. Here's what it says. It says, the evening meal was in progress. This was their last supper together. And the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So here's what I want us to see. So he got up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing and he wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that, he poured water into a basin, and he began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. We'll stop right there, okay? I want us to stop right here, because I want us to make sure, this may be a passage, this may be a part of this chapter of John that's familiar to us, we've heard it before, but I want to stop right here to make sure that we understand what is happening here. Because it's so much more than just that. Oh, he got up, he washed their feet. I want us to understand what's happening because it's so much more than what it just seems on the surface. Okay, you might read this and think, well, that's kind of weird. That's kind of gross, right? Maybe one of those people that are grossed out by feet, right? You don't want to, you know, touch feet, and you certainly don't want feet touching you, okay? Some of you are, you know who you are, that you're just kind of grossed out by them. So at the very least, you're thinking, well, this is strange, okay? But it's really so much more than that. Here's what's happening. In Jesus' day, washing feet was pretty commonplace, right? When someone came into your home. This was a pretty customary thing to do when someone came into your home. Today, when someone comes into your home, it's just normal. It's just natural. It's just customary to welcome someone in, right? If you came to my house, I'd welcome you in, and I'd say, hey, could I take your coat? Would you like a cup of coffee? Could I get you a glass of water, right? That would just be very normal, natural. That's the thing to do is you welcome someone into your home. In Jesus's day, It was customary, it was common, because they walked around on dusty roads in sandals all day, it was customary to welcome someone into your home and to wash their feet, right? That's just what you did, right? So a host would welcome you in and offer to wash your feet. But here's the thing, right? The host would never, ever even dream about doing this themselves. A host would never, ever, ever wash the feet of a guest. Why? Because they were too important for that. Well, washing the feet of people that came into your home, it was such a lowly, honestly, it was such a degrading task, even that it was reserved. In that day, it was reserved for servants, right? A host would say, hey, yeah, come on in. Can I wash your feet? But they're not doing that. Right, they're too important for that. They've got someone else that would do that. They're too proud for that. They'd be too embarrassed to do that. So he said, hey, yeah, we've got a servant who will do that. right? There were such social implications for this that in no way ever, not in this moment or elsewhere, there were so many social implications that in no way did you ever see someone with a higher status washing the feet of someone below them, right? It was the role of a servant. If we're really honest, in that day, it was the role of a slave. And so Jesus, the night before he gives up his own life, he's sitting around the table. He's trying to have this moment. He's watching his disciples argue about who's going to be the greatest. And he realizes that this is a chance to teach them something that they need to understand. He realizes this is a moment where I need to teach them a pretty great lesson. So he gets up. And he wraps this towel around his waist, and he reaches for the basin of water and starts to fill it up, and his disciples are freaking out. They're going, no, you can't do that, right? Then this isn't going to happen. If you were going, I think I stepped in something earlier today, right? You don't come near me, right? This isn't for you, Jesus. You can't do that. This will be weird for all of us. This will be too uncomfortable. You can't do this. But he gets down on his knees. And he begins to wash their feet. He's looking around at his guys, and they're sitting there arguing, right? All proud and all this stuff. And he looks around, and he realizes their feet need to be washed. And he says, I can do that. And so he gets down, and he starts to wash their feet. In doing this, this is what I'm saying, right? In doing this, and in doing this now, I think he's trying to teach them a powerful lesson. It's verses 12 to 17. We're going to look at it here. This is the lesson that I think he wants them to learn here in this moment before he goes. It's the lesson he wants them to learn. I think it's the lesson that all of us need to hear. It's a lesson I want us to learn as well. So let's just keep reading here this story and see what it is that it might say to us, right? Jesus has just washed their feet, and we pick up again in verse 12. It said, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and he returned to his place. He says, do you understand what I have done for you? He asks them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, he says, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and your teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. He says to them, I have set for you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, he wants them to get this. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And then he finished by saying, now that you know these things, what? You will be blessed if you do them. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Right, I think he's teaching them a really powerful lesson here, and I think there's a few things that we need to learn as well, starting with this, right? If we want to learn to love like Jesus, if you want to love like Jesus, you have to start to serve like Jesus. Right, it's pretty plain and simple. He says, hey, this is what I'm doing for you now. I just did it for you. I just set the example for you. Now you have to go and do the same for other people. Serve other people around you in your life, right? He's setting the example for them and doing so in a pretty memorable, in a pretty powerful way, hoping that this is a moment, that this is a scene that they will remember for a long time to come, and that they too would start to serve one another, that they would serve like Jesus served them. So, right, we got to know that if we want to love like Jesus, we have to start to serve like Jesus. And if we're going to do that, if we're going to serve others like Jesus does, then I think we need to understand something about serving that Jesus demonstrates for us here. We need to understand that serving one another, right, or serving in general, it's an attitude, not an action. Right? Serving one another is an attitude, not an action. Verse 16, it says, no servant is greater than his master, nor is the messenger greater than the one who sent him. Right? He's referring to himself here. Right? Because his disciples are freaking out at this. They're going, hey, Jesus, you can't do this. Do you know who you are? You can't do this, right? And he's saying, no, look, folks, he's saying, I'm just God's servant. I'm just the messenger. He sent me. He said, I'm not the one who should be getting all the credit here. That's an attitude of his, Right? He said, hey, all God's authority, God's all his power is under my control now. And this is the guy, too, that he heals the sick. He gives sight to the blind. He's turning water into wine. He's bringing dead people back to life. And he's saying, hey, no. I'm not any greater. I'm no greater than the one who sent me. He says, hey, I'm just here to serve. Right? It's earlier in the book of John. Some of you might remember, what does he say? He says, I didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. Serving is an attitude. He says, hey, I'm not any greater than the one who sent me here. I'm not greater than anyone else here. I'm just to serve. It's an attitude. It's not an action. It's not a thing. It's not just a moment. It's not just an event that you sign up for. It's not just a time that starts and stops. It's an attitude. And when serving is our attitude, when it's not just a moment, when it's not just an action or kind of a thing that starts and stops, we start to develop eyes, we start to develop a greater awareness for the needs that we can meet. Jesus looked around, he said, their feet need to be washed. He said, that's a need that I can meet. And when we start to look around like that, looking for needs that we can meet, right? When we see a need that we can meet, a serving attitude says, I can do that. Right? No matter what it is or how much we feel like, no, I don't do that. I'm too important for that. I'm too busy for that. Right? A serving attitude, when we look around and we see a need we can meet, a serving attitude says, I can do that. And this isn't to say that you have to spend every waking hour, every entire hour and moment of the day just meeting other people's needs, right? I'm not just saying that your whole life has to just be spent going, I can do that, right? All I'm saying here is that I hope that when you see a need that you can meet, when it pops up in front of you, I hope that you would stop long enough, that you would pause long enough and maybe just ask God, God, is this an assignment? Right, maybe this has popped up in front of me for a reason. Asking God, God, is this an assignment that you might have for me today? Right, sometimes it's the very things we say, no, I don't do that. That's the very thing that God's saying, hey, that is what I've got for you today. So no, you don't have to spend your entire day just going one thing down the line, right? But I hope that when you see a need that you realize you can meet, you'd ask God, God, is this an assignment that you would have for me today? Could I mow their lawn? Could I shovel their driveway? Right? Could I buy that family groceries this week? I know the week they've had. I know where their kids have been. I know they've been in and out of the hospital. Right? Could I bring a few meals to them? Right? Could I give up a few hours of my day to make their day? Right? Could I join that team? Could I pitch in for that cause? Could I put some wind in the sails of that mission, of that vision? Right? And when you stop and you ask God, God, is this something that you would have for me? Sometimes you realize, and sometimes you can say to yourselves, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. And here's the great thing about that kind of attitude, right? The great thing about serving, that if we see in this passage, if we look closely, he will see this, right? The great thing about serving one another, the great thing about having this attitude that says, hey, I can do that, is that when you serve, here's what I believe to be true, that when you serve, oftentimes, the first life that you change is your own. Right? When you step up to the plate, when you say, I can do that, oftentimes, the first life that you change, the first life that you impact, the first life that you bless is your own. Jesus tells his disciples here in this moment, he says, I'm just a servant. Right? He says, I'm not any greater than the one who sent me. He's telling these guys, hey, I just washed your feet. I was just serving you. Now you go do the same thing for other people. And when he finishes, he's saying this to them. He says, and now that you know these things, right? He's trying to teach them a lesson. And he says, and now that you know these things, you will be what? You will be blessed if you do them. He's saying to them, hey, if you would make your life about serving others, if you would make your life about having this attitude that says, hey, I can do that, he says, you too will be blessed. Why? Because oftentimes when you serve, when this is your attitude, right, serving changes lives, folks, and oftentimes when you serve, the first life that you change is your very own. When you live kind of a me-first life, just get what you need, do what you need, do what you want, right? More often than not, this is just my opinion, right? More often than not, when your head hits the pillow at the end of the day, there's going to come a point when you start to feel kind of empty. Maybe it's not today, maybe it's not tomorrow, maybe it's not the next day, right? But eventually this kind of me first living starts to run dry. But when you experience the satisfaction, when you experience the joy of meeting needs, when you experience the joy of stepping in and stepping up to make a difference for someone or something somewhere, all of a sudden there's a spark in you. All of a sudden you realize, man, there's a purpose, there's a value to the life that you're living. There's a reason to get up in the morning that's far greater and far more exciting than the emails waiting in your inbox. Trust me. You start to realize, man, this is making a difference in me. I realize there's more to this life that I'm living, right? And when you don't serve, not only are you robbing people around you of what it is that you have to offer, not only are you missing out on the chance to meet real practical needs of people around you, but you're robbing yourself the chance of receiving the blessing that God has in store for you. He says, hey, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. So let me just ask you this then, as we start to bring this to a close here, right? Simple questions, not meant to be, saying, hey, shame on you. Just questions for us to ask ourselves, right? How do you serve others? Is this a part of your life or your mentality? Is this an attitude, right? Where do you serve others? Who is it that you serve? Who is it that you're looking to serve? With that kind of attitude, right? Not when's the last, time you signed up to do something, right? But who is it that you serve? Where is it that you serve with this kind of attitude that says, I can do that? Right, if you're saying, hey, Sten, this is great. You just point me in the right direction. I'm all in. I want to jump on this train. What I'd say to you is this, that oftentimes, the place to start, I'd say oftentimes the greatest opportunities to serve others, to have this kind of attitude, oftentimes the greatest places to serve others are right under your nose every single day. If you're married, it starts with your spouse. Start to develop this attitude of serving, right? If you have kids, same thing goes there. It's developing an attitude that looks every single day to say, hey, I can do that. Oftentimes I haven't. Sometimes I feel like I can't. Other times I feel like I've got more important things to do, or this is my role and that's your role, but it's your way of saying, hey, no, I can do that. It's saying to your spouse, it's saying to your kids who have a need, right? Hey, I can do that. Right, all my daughter wants me to do is, play Barbies with her for like 15 minutes, right? And sometimes I wonder if my attention span for Barbie playing is only like 30 seconds long. But sometimes I realize that she's asking me, Dad, will you come play? I just have to say to myself, I can do that. And that's just a small example in the house, right? Sometimes it starts there, right? And it goes out. What about your coworkers? Right, people you spend a whole lot of time with every single day. It's getting to know them. It's getting to know their hopes, getting to know their dreams, getting to know their fears, getting to know who they are. It's learning about the needs that they have. It's learning about the needs in their families, learning about the needs in their career, or maybe a project they're working on in a season of their life. And it's telling God, it's maybe asking God, wondering out loud to God, hey, I think I could meet that need, and asking God, is this an assignment that you might have for me? God, is this someone that you might have brought across my path for a specific reason? You got to ask yourself, God, is there a need that I can meet? Same thing goes for our neighbors too, right? At the very least, folks, I hope that Midcurrent Church, right, that those of us who are a part of this church, I hope that we would be the best neighbors, at the very least, if nothing else, I hope that people associated with Midcurrent Church would be the best stinking neighbors that this town has ever seen. I mean, I hope that every follower of Jesus, right, or people, again, that are kind of taking a step down that lane, I hope we would be the best neighbors on every street and every neighborhood and every city across the planet. It's just looking at our neighbors, getting to know them, looking at their lives, looking at what they have going on in their world, and coming to them with an attitude that says, hey, you know what? I can do that. You got a need that I can meet? I can do that. Your family has a need that I can meet? I can do that. And the other place that's often right under your nose is whether it's here or whether it's elsewhere, if you're visiting with us today, the other place is often serving right in the local church. Right, maybe there's a need there that you can meet, or maybe there's a need there that isn't being met, And you're saying, man, that's a need that we should be meeting, and I can do that. And there's an opportunity to do something that isn't being done. Folks, the church is often one of the best places to just start to develop this attitude of serving one another. To start to develop an attitude that says, hey, I can do that. The best place to start developing an attitude is saying, hey, that's a need that I can meet. And I'll just be clear, that's not some pitch to, you know, fill up our rosters here and say, hey, join a team and we need more folks, right? We need you. No, that's just a pitch to tell you when you serve, when that's your attitude to look around at people, to places, the thing, when that's your attitude, say, yeah, I can do that. It puts you in a position to change lives. Oftentimes, starting with you, starting with your own life. Not only are you meeting the legitimate needs of people in places around you, but oftentimes it starts with you. It starts with your own life. You start to find purpose. You start to find value. You start to find excitement. You start to find a new worth of your very own. You join a team. You start making friends. People now starting to check in on you, praying for you when the kids are sick, when you're going through a rough season. You slowly start to become part of a community that starts to feel like a family. And then all of a sudden, years down the line, one comes 2 years and two becomes three. And all of a sudden, you can't imagine not having them in your corner. Folks, there are some legitimate needs in the lives of people in places around this church and this community, right? And when we serve, we get a chance to actually meet those needs. We get a chance to start to change lives around us. And oftentimes, the first life that's changed, the first life that's impacted, the first heart that's opened is our own. It's your own when you choose to serve. So here's what I want to say in closing. Wherever it is, whoever it is, for the sake of ourselves, for the sake of our neighborhoods, for the sake of our schools, for the sake of our workplaces, for the sake of our communities, let's this week, you and me, let's this week be more aware. Let's have eyes that would start to look. Let's be more aware of the needs that we could meet. Let's start to ask God, is this maybe an assignment that you have sent my way? Just pause for just a moment. Stop long enough to ask God that question. God, is this something that you might have for me to do right now? Let's start to develop an attitude that's looking around to all people, to all circumstances, hoping to say, hey, I can do that. Me personally, I want to be a part of a church. I want to be part of churches. I want to be part of communities and neighborhoods and small groups and groups of friends that are saying, hey, I can do that. I want to be part of groups of people that are saying, hey, we can do that. And I hope the same is true for you. Let me pray for us. God, thanks so much for this morning. And we give you thanks, God, throughout this whole series for the example that we see Jesus set. God, we really do. I do, and I want more of us, God, here in this room to learn what it is to love like you did, God. Like your son did, right? Jesus' ability to love people, to engage with people, to draw people to him was incredible, God. And we want to follow that example, God. And so I just pray that you would help us to do that, God, that you'd give us new eyes. God, maybe there's some kind of change in our heart that needs to happen. Maybe it's some kind of change of attitude. Maybe it's just a fresh kind of outlook, a fresh perspective on the lives that we live day in and day out, God. Maybe, would you help us to make that shift? So that we would have an attitude that's looking for more places to say, hey, I can do that. That we wouldn't say, hey, no, but I won't do that, right? I'm too busy for that. I'm too important for that. Someone else will do that. I don't have time for that. God, I pray that when we discover needs in the world around us, that we would stop long enough and ask you even if that's something that a need that we can meet, God, that more and more we would find ourselves saying, hey, I can do that. That would be our attitude in our homes, in our families, in our marriages, in our parenting, God. That would be our attitude as neighbors. That would be our attitude as coworkers, as bosses, God, as managers, as friends. God, I pray that little by little, we would find that those words are coming out of our mouth more and more. Hey, I can do that. And I pray that you would help us to see the change, the impact that's being made, not only in our own life, but in the world around us, God. Change that we need to see, change that we're desperate to see happening. God, I pray that we might be at the center of it all, that we might be leading the way. And so we ask for your help in doing this, and we pray all these things in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.